and welcome to the Unofficial Controller Podcast, your weekly gaming podcast, closing in on that big 100, Bobby. It's episode 91, an Englishman's take on American sports, with me, George, as always joined by Bobby. Home run and fireworks to my no-hitter and out in three. How's it going?
It's going good.
There's a simplistic understanding of the baseball game from me. Before we let... let me first of all say, so everything's doing good down your end.
Yeah, so far so good.
Celebrity podcast life treating you well?
Yeah, as good as it can.
Okay, well, hopefully maybe me and you fine dining on a Trestles takeout on completion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be... What was that thing we had on the Trestles episode? What did I have? The fully loaded sandwich or something?
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Again?
That's what I want. Yeah.
Just try the French toast, bro.
Okay, we'll go French toast.
It's really good.
Before this disappears down a small segue of food.
And then we're going to get the new hot toddy, bro.
Hot toddy? What's hot toddy?
Remember hot toddy?
Yeah, but what's their new hot toddy? What's in this?
It's the same. I don't know. It's a regular hot toddy, but it's, you know, it's new to them. They started making them.
Right. Okay. Well, whatever.
I don't even know what's in a hot toddy, to be honest, but I know there's alcohol involved. Yeah.
Question. There's two celebrity podcasters in New York on lockdown. Do we need any more alcohol?
Well, there's never enough, but considering we've been locked down, we have been very minimal on it, which is good.
I've been secretly...
It's easy to overdo it.
I've been secretly drinking in the bathroom. Open up the cistern in the shared bathroom. That's why it's not flushing as powerful as it used to, because there's three bottles of vodka in there.
Okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, every time I go for a toilet break, I drink.
Oh, I see.
It's out of control.
Yeah, it is.
Let's give fans the reassuring welcome hug of where... I mean, I don't know if this can carry on. I think El Buccio is going to step in at some point in time. I really do, because we're spending money like water, and he's running out because lockdown, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like suddenly speedboats smashing across the Atlantic Ocean look a little bit more obvious when they're not sort of mixed in with all the holy craft. It kind of looks very obvious to the customs.
It's getting difficult.
It's getting very difficult. So money's getting tight, and I feel he might terminate the credit card. Which would be terrible. Anyway, enough woes of celebrity podcasting life. Let's give the fans new and old a rundown of how the show's going to go. So coming up, we've got some news. In there, obviously, we've got all the multi-format news you could ever, ever dream of. So stick around for that. Then we've got the feature, which, as the show is titled, it's an Englishman's take on American sports. They translate very well to video games. And to some people, they're their only route in to the hardcore stats that is American sports. Then we slip and slide our way out of the feature into the welcoming arms of the mulleted man that brings us the new releases every week, the immortal yet mute Stingray. And then after that, I'll be asking Bobby what he's hoping to play. But before we get through all that, the show cannot begin. It does not start until Odders grip tight on that copy of NBA Jam and that plastic baseball bat you found, as I ask Bobby, what you been playing?
Oh, a little bit of Cyberpunk.
Yes.
A lot of Zombie Army Trilogy. So we're only five levels away from the platinum, me and my boy Marlon. And we're going to get it at the same exact time, because he was one trophy behind. So I said, listen, just do that trophy by yourself. And here's a good spot to farm. You have to get like 10,000 limbs. So I told him a good spot where enemies keep respawning. I said, listen, blow the zombies to pieces. It'll keep track. Once you get that thing, we'll continue. So now it'll pop at the same time. So basically every game we platinum together, we make sure we pop at the same time.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah,
and then we have a bunch of other Rebellion games. To be honest with you, the next Rebellion game released, I'm going to message them like, hey, bro, we platinumed all your games. Give us a free copy. I mean, literally, we only have like three games left to platinum for this company that I'm aware of.
I personally think that if you reached out as the UC with El Buccio's financial weight behind you, we don't abuse the rights and privileges of being celebrity podcasters.
No, never.
We maybe should.
can't.
If you want a free copy of whatever game they bring out next, if you,
you
want
gotta
me
be
to
be humble, I'd rather ask permission than throw some weight. You catch more flies with honey. You know what I'm saying?
Than you do with vinegar. I love that saying. Absolutely right. Okay. Well,
so that's pretty much that, you know.
Well, if you want the official social media arm of the Unofficial Controller Podcast to reach out to Rebellion and regale them the story of the co-host Bobby, who's platinumed all their games, and would be you know, terribly humbled if we could have a review copy of whatever is next.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Do you want to do that? Should we do that?
Well, I mean, it's not gonna hurt to try. I guess we can always try, right? If you don't
it means that we're gonna have to theme a whole show around that game.
Maybe not the game, but maybe just the Rebellion itself.
Well, yeah, which I find quite fascinating because I've said to you before, the owner has started his own YouTube thing because he's a massive, massive history buff. Specializing on the Middle Ages and knights and the life of a medieval, any person from peasant to a lord, really. And he's got some absolutely amazing videos on there. I do believe he's been knighted as well. So I think he's a Sir X, Y, or Z, whatever his name is. At the moment, it eludes me. But yeah, he's massively into all that. And he's into reenactments and he rides horses and trains them in a classical medieval style. He makes they're the right size because obviously history, horses have been bred to get bigger and bigger and bigger over time. But if you go back like to 1066, they were riding in their cavalry arm, what we would call sort of ponies now. It's just the way things have gone. So yeah, their horses weren't huge. You know, when you imagine a knight on a horse, a shire horse, it's massive. Well, Norman knights weren't armored in the same way. So their horses didn't need to be as big. And it's a bit of a myth about the size of the horse anyway. So before this turns into a full on, I've always threatened to do a history podcast because it's one of my passions, but I think that it's unnecessary right now. You've got to stay in the medium that you started in. It's not the Unofficial Controller History Podcast, is it? And I don't, as much as I think people would be polite and they'd be like, wow, actually, that's really interesting. I'll listen to it. They wouldn't. What else? So that's basically it. A little bit of cyberpunk. What's bit you with cyberpunk? Has something bad happened in there? Or is it just Zombie Army Trilogies where you're at right now? You just want some mindless fun?
Yeah, because my boy's schedule changed a little bit. So he's home, you know, earlier. So we just hopped on early. You know, normally I play at night and then he would get on maybe for like an hour or so. So now he got back to his old schedule. So we're just playing more of it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So
what about you?
I'd have finished Heavy Rain last week or not.
You were talking about you were almost done with it.
Yeah, that was done. I think that night, actually. And I know I definitely played it back in the day, but I don't think I ever finished it. I was a bit of a weird animal back in the day for games, especially when I had 360 and PS3. I found it very hard to... I had so much choice, I found it very hard to concentrate on one thing and finish it before diving on and sampling 10 minutes to the next. And now I'm a bit more sort of, for the most part, I'm starting this and I'm finishing it. And especially if it grabs me. And Heavy Rain, although I knew the ending because I had it spoiled for me about 2 years ago.
Did you get?
Well, no.
Was it like bad or was it good? Or was
the ending I had spoiled for me was obviously who the Origami Killer was.
Yeah.
Which I didn't mind actually playing it through because it kind of like I picked up on all the nuances and clues that were in there that kind of revealed it.
Yeah, if you pay attention to it, you could probably figure it out if you really go through every detail.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
I like. Yeah,
there's enough bits in there for you to piece it together. I think if you were clever enough. The ending I got, I'm so annoyed because I made a mistake with Madison. I think her name's Madison, isn't it? And I got out of the window and to me it looks survivable. As I said, I jumped off a roof earlier and that character had survived. But then another character had survived. I jumped out the window, was her, and didn't survive. And it was like, that's a bit pony. Yeah. But yeah, I think everyone died bar the killer. And then the killer died at the end anyway. So You know, I think everyone died in my one, which was frustrating because there were some little bits that I could have done. I know I could have done looking back now where it's like, yeah, I could have saved it. I'm pretty sure we did talk about this last week. So yeah, apologies to everybody. And then I decided I was going to install and play on PlayStation 3, obviously, the beloved PlayStation 3. When it's not on, I sit stroking it with a lint-free microfiber cloth just so it knows. I don't want to scratch it, so I just sort of stroke it across its chrome accents. Beyond Two Souls, my goodness gracious me, what a beautiful looking game. And actually, the story, fantastic. I know a lot of people, I know it didn't review very well. People say, oh, it's not really a game, but I find these things to be games. And I thoroughly enjoy them. So I've got Detroit Become Human to load in next. And I've also been toying with a game called Remember Me by Capcom, and published by Capcom, developed by a French studio that went on to do Life is Strange. They did this game in 2013, I think it was, on 360 and PS3. It's like a sort of cyberpunk style game where everyone's got like memories that they can have removed and saved and manipulated. And the controls are a bit wonky. Like, I think the fighting is, I don't think it's of its time. I think even on its time, it was weird. You kind of build your own combos in a stat menu. So square plus triangle plus square. Now, one of these, you've got what's called a healing combo where you can kick health out of an enemy. It makes it sound arcadey, but it's not. So if you do triangle, square, triangle, that's like one way you can regain health. If you do square, 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 that's like a full-on punch, punch, punch combo. But the story's actually quite mature. You sort of wake up in this room and it's all done movie style. I've always been toying with the idea because, again, it's a game I picked up cheap and it's very similar storytelling to Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls, but it's a lot more gamified. You know, you wouldn't be punching people in Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah.
You'd just be sort of left down triangle every now and then you'd be interacting with it. I did find going back to Beyond Two Souls, the control setup on that. Have you played Beyond Two Souls?
No, I haven't.
I thoroughly recommend it. It was a PSN game for the remaster on PS4, which I don't think looks as good because there's some depth of field things they're doing on the PS3.
It was free on PS3 for Plus. I remember downloading it because I wanted to play it. Elliot Page and William Dafoe, right?
They are both. William Dafoe, not as much, I don't think. I just don't think he maybe... His acting's a little bit strange anyway, and I just don't think his nuances are captured through facial animation or whatever. Mm. And sometimes some of the things he delivers on film are a bit sort of flat. Take Spider-Man, for instance. You know, he's a bit strange in that. And
he was having fun, I think.
Right? I know, but equally
when
so.
When he acts, like when he wants to be serious, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I don't
think... But if he wants to have fun, he's a bit goofy.
I feel he was a bit goofy in this.
Yeah,
which is a shame because the rest of the storyline, Ellen Page acted her heart out, mate. It was it was amazing. And some of the journeys you go on, like there's a section in there where she finds herself homeless and you kind of fall in with these homeless people. And that was just fantastic. So well done. So well done.
See, I think if the cinematic movie or whatever they're called nowadays, if they're done right, even if it's not considered a video game or you're not pushing that many buttons, it's an amazing journey.
Mm.
But if they're done corny, like The Bunker, when I played that, it was kind of a little bit corny because you could tell like there's two ways to go about it. So if you don't do something, you know, it's like almost like two scenes would happen.
Yeah.
And then it would like cut to like, okay, so you didn't do that. Here's another scene, but it kind of looks odd.
Heavy Rain had an element of that, but it wasn't so obvious. It wasn't
exactly, yeah.
But like, Beyond Two Souls morphed it to the point where I could not see the choices. It was flawless.
That's awesome. That's when it's like really, really good.
The one, I'll get back to my original point of bringing it up again. Instead of in Heavy Rain or Fahrenheit, you're using the face buttons, X, square, or ABC, or whatever, on whatever format you're playing it on. And on Beyond Two Souls, you use gestures with the right stick only. There's no button prompts at all, unless you're like grabbing for something or you're climbing something. A lot of the time, you're left, right, up, or down with the actual stick because they wanted to remove barrier to entry to non-gamers.
Mm.
But, you know, that's the only thing I struggled with a little bit, because she sort of slows down as she's making a move, and you have to interpret it the direction that her body is moving in, and then you finish it off with the stick. If you go the wrong way, and sometimes when she's sort of punching diagonally up left or up right in the screen, it's hard to interpret whether that's up or whether that's up left or not. And okay, there's been times where it's failed. Like, there's an element where you're training to be a CIA agent, and you're doing like a boxing or, you know, martial arts barehanded training, you know, how to disarm people and all that. And it wasn't terribly clear to me where I should be pushing this stick. And I was getting super frustrated, because I remember thinking to myself, if this was Heavy Rain, it would be X, square, and triangle. And I'd have done it in one go and I'd look like a hero. But now I'm like, and it's like, and like wrong. And you get knocked to the floor and it's like, get up, we're doing it again until you get it right. And it was like four or five goes before it was like, right, okay, up, left, down, right. And just navigating that. But I actually like the way it was jiggled up, because like, the story's out of timeline. When they remastered it and released it for PS4, which you must have as well, because the PS4 remaster was on PSN as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to play it in original order or in chronology order. And I sometimes feel like that would be robbing the game of some of its moments, where you immediately find out what happens next, whereas normally you get to find out what happens next through the lens of something that happened to her in her childhood, which I actually thought was quite...
Yes, I think I'll be better.
It's full, yeah. David Cage when it's mixed up, and I feel, mm-hmm, if you're going to get into these games, you've got to appreciate what he is as a storyteller. Also, this morning, as I was thinking about Beyond Two Souls and all that other sort of stuff, I was watching E3's 2003 press conference, right? Because why not at this, mm-hmm, point? I've watched all the others, so I thought I'm going to make this the full deuce. And in there, they were like, Kaz Kitarari, or whatever his name is, was doing his presentation. And he said about how films really got going, I think, in 1906 or 1907, the first feature film was released. And obviously, video games, Pong was released, I think, in 1972, which was, mm-hmm, what we all encompass as really being the first game. I know there's other false starts before that, but that's one thing that we can pin our hat on. And sort of 1906, 1907 is somewhere we can pin our hat on the movie side. If we then like think about where films are now, if we apply that same timeline, do you know where we are in development of... If games started around the same time as films, it would be 1955, okay? Just think about that as a maturing, mm-hmm, medium, about how far games have yet to go. Because Star Wars didn't come out until 1977. We're still 20 years away from something as defining as Star Wars happening in video games.
Really?
That as an evolution of a storytelling medium, if that makes sense. So if 1972 was our 1906 start point, we're only in 1955. So if you think about what a 1955 movie is to one now, how different it is, how much
super it's different. Evolved.
Yeah.
If you go back and watch some of those Alfred Hitchcock movies or those classic 50 movies from the, what, like John Wayne era movies, some people might just turn it off.
I think some people would.
But so I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, 1955 saw the release of Dam Busters. Obviously, it's, mm-hmm, a British film about the bombing of the Ruhr Dam in Germany. And that's quite a good film that I think for the most part you could watch now. There's probably, mm-hmm, some sort of bits and bobs you'd need to edit. The dog's name, for instance, which we won't go into. But other than, mm-hmm, that, you know, it's actually quite an enjoyable film. But if you think about how much further games can go and how far they've got to this point versus where movies have got to by 1955. It's a bit of a dodgy line. And I almost picked up my pen immediately and started writing in my script notes ideas book about, maybe I should do a magnum opus about films evolution as a storytelling medium versus games. And then I was like, nah.
Well, like what do you think? Like in the PS2? I mean, the PS1 era had some really good story-driven games.
Well, they'd be like 19 like a movie. Yeah, but that'd be like the equivalent of a 1930s film, which, yeah, were good. Do you know what I mean? The medium had evolved, mm-hmm, and there were some films from the 1930s. You know, look at Wizard of Oz.
And anything before PS1 era, forget about it. You tell a little story and a little ding, but like,
yeah, but
now, even like the David Cage games, it's like a real movie, bro. And some of the stuff they get into is deep. Some of them, you could be, it's, some of them are sad too.
Very much so.
Yeah, well, imagine, touching.
Imagine where they're going to be 22 years from now.
I know. It's, especially with cap motion animation or digital effects. And, you know, if you get one actor who loves a game and wants to be in it and he's acting his heart out, that can change everything.
It certainly can. I think that's probably a little bit deeper and nuanced than we should ever travel down for what you've been playing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do what we always do. Let's change tack immediately. Come about heading 120. What's that I see? It's the news. We've scoured the very darkest regions of the internet to bring you the latest stories. First up, Bobby, it's
Red Alt.
I like what you're doing there. What's this bit of news about, friend?
It's the man, the main man behind PlayStation VR masterpieces, Tetris Effect, and Res Infinite, has confirmed he now has a new PS5 game in development over at Enhanced Games. It'll follow in the same vein as previous experience from, and excuse me for this, because I'm about to murder this word, Tsuyora Mizuguchi.
To be honest, that's,
and you know what? That sounded great to me. I'm not gonna lie.
That was great.
That's the best thing I ever read on the show. And take advantage of the unique capabilities Sony's new controller has to offer, including 3D audio and the DualSense controller's haptic feedback. In an interview with Famitsu, picked up by the Video Game Chronicle, Mizuguchi reveals that Area X from Res Infinite will actually act as a sort of prologue to the studio's next game. In particular, Area X in Res Infinite was developed as a prologue to the next game, and we hope to use that concept in the next generation of games. With the concept of XR technology, we'd like to increase the overall resolution and create a more detailed game. He then goes on to explain what it is about the PS5's unique feature set that excites him so much. He says, When haptic tactical technology is added to the mix, the total integrated experience of visual, sound, and tactical sensations is not just multiplied by a factor of several when that happens. Things start to happen in what the past would not have felt like. This is in a game. We believe we can make it happen, and we're climbing the stairs one by one. Given Mizuguchi's focus on blending audio and visual design into one, it's hardly a surprise to see him so interested in what 3D audio and haptic feedback can bring to games. Perfect example. So I was playing Zombie Army Trilogy on the PS4 for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, so what happened is my friend moved, so we had to take a break. And then now we got his house up, he's hooked up. So now I have the PS5. And I noticed somehow a lot, I can hear a lot more of the voices, like whispering through my controller on the PS5 than the PS4.
Oh, wow.
And there was an update. I don't know what the update did, but it updated my Zombie Army Trilogy game. So I don't know what it was, but I hear like the zombies. Because before, if you weren't playing, it would whisper like, play with me, or, you know, like, watch out, something like that.
Wow.
Now it's like constantly, like when you're fighting something, watch your back. And if you turn around, there's zombies behind you.
Wow.
So, and I'm like, did you hear that? Like, are you hearing your controller? He's like, no. So I'm wondering if there is a difference just from that game. That game is old. It's not even new. So I'm wondering if they're kind of editing this controller now.
That's very interesting.
It really is.
Me and you were both sort of pleasantly surprised, I would say, by Astrobot. A is a game, because it was certainly a fun mm-hmm. little romp for a short game that it was. And me, you and Tom, I think, both doubled yeah. down and got the platinum on that.
It's awesome.
And I think everyone needs to if they've got it. But although it was like a tech demo for what haptic feedback can mm-hmm. be, I think you certainly felt the full plethora of everything that the controller can offer at that point. And some of it landed, and I think some of it missed the mark. But for the most part, they nailed it bang on. I think the ice skating was a particular note, and the way the wind and the sand worked to
yes.
as you walk through that sandstorm, you could actually mm-hmm. feel the granularity move.
It was so different than the grass.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that they're going to incorporate that into a Rez-style game, which has always been... I remember when Rez launched, maybe on PS2, it came with like this backpack you could put on that sort of beated to the music,
mm-hmm.
like a shock suit you could wear. I think it was really for Rez, but it, obviously you could wear it for other games and get the vibration mm-hmm. and other bits and bobs. But a little bit gimmicky, but they've always been on the cutting edge of incorporating music, haptic feedback, and visuals. Mm-hmm. So to have that on the table for a game that's just everything's going to support it, it means they don't need to think about how they need to make it work for everybody
yeah.
when they can make it work just for that. So I'm kind of eager to see what comes of that. I think that should be quite interesting. Think,
if they're thinking like it's not just a rumble. Like it's not like the N64 Rumble or the PS3 Rumble. It's totally different.
Mm.
Like if you get a game to do it, like you said, it'll be light vibration for the grass, a little bit of like more rumble, or depending on what side you're on, it'll do different, you know, yes. vibration sequences.
Yeah.
So it really does. It's totally different. It's pretty cool, actually.
That's something that you think they would have done before, the ability to spin up the feedback motor mm-hmm. separately, but the feedback motor has been wired to the same circuit, so they spin up at the same time.
Yeah.
Interesting. So
on the PS4, I think I turned everything off because it was more annoying than anything.
Well, I've always
but now had it I'm on. Like, now I like it on. Certain games really do use it, you know, quite well.
Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of liked the Rumble, even when I first, you know, used an N64 Rumble pack.
Yeah, I liked it for a little bit, but I took it out. I'm like, it's just rumbling. Like,
in the games that supported it properly, like Ocarina of Time, I think the game that launched it was Star Fox 64, was it not? Did it not come with a Rumble pack bundled in?
Mm-hmm.
I think it did. And the other sort of first-party Rare games that used it properly, it was really great. And it actually added to the game.
Like, I think in WCW or NWO, if you did your special to your friend, his controller would rumble. Like, you just got knocked out. Like,
oh, wow.
I don't think yours would, but his would, because you knocked him out with a special.
Fantastic.
So I think, yeah.
Talking of Nintendo, here's some Nintendo news. Share nicely or don't. It's an interesting story here. We've gotten a few pieces of information about Nintendo's recent financial results this week, having published 2020's nine-month figures on Monday. The Q&A session between Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa and numerous investors has also been released. This brought up several points of interest, namely when we can expect to see Nintendo's upcoming games, and one investor believes that with nearly 80 million units sold so far, the Switch could overtake the Nintendo Wii's lifetime sales at over 101 million. Just when Nintendo needed something, along came the Switch. Mm-hmm. Switch could event... Asking what Nintendo will do to push Switch sales further, Furukawa starts by citing Animal Crossing New Horizons' success in getting people interested, alongside nostalgia for Super Mario Bros. 35th anniversary. Going further, he also detailed demand for multiple consoles within one family, confirming our research, and I find this fascinating, our research has found that approximately 20% of the Nintendo Switch family sell-through between October and December 2020 in the main regions was due to demand for multiple systems within the same family. We will aim to continue increasing our sales volume by rigorously responding to this kind of demand for multiple systems as well. While stock has improved in recent times, Switch consoles were notoriously difficult to find during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, a situation that led some retailers inflating prices. It's pleasing to see that Nintendo's not only aware of demand, but will rigorously try meeting it. Now, for me, the bit about that is that gamers' families aren't just having one Switch console in the family anymore. They're probably having a Switch console with the main TV and then maybe a light as well, or vice versa, or two kids getting a light
TV.
Yeah, or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
2, 3, 4 Switches in a household doesn't seem like an unrealistic expectation, really. So,
no.
You know, mum's playing Animal Crossing, daughter's playing Animal Crossing, dad's playing Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
And son's playing Fortnite or Rocket League, and they're all doing it separately on their own devices. So, yeah, I think that the Switch is sort of scheduled to do some gangbuster numbers. I mean, they're not looking at replacing it anytime soon. So if they do an evolution and still call it the Switch, that will count towards this number, much like the Game Boy Color numbers counted towards the Game Boy overall sales total. So that could be...
All it needs is an HD, real true HD screen, and boom. People who have the original Switch will buy another one.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's this fabled Switch Pro they've been threatening. At the moment, I don't feel like they need to bring it out because they're just they're doing fine without it. If those numbers start to flag off, boom, bring out a Switch Pro.
And then that's boom, perfect marketing.
Yeah. What's next in this bag of news, Bobby? Pull out the last morsel and feed it to us, please.
We've got one man's trash is another man's treasure. You might remember that back in December, Xbox kicked off a new initiative called Beyond Generations, encouraging young people to start playing their elderly relatives to connect through gaming. Today, Microsoft unveiled something called Reboxing Kit, designed to make your spare Xbox console simple for your elderly relative to set up, giving you everything you need to package it up correctly. You can download the Reboxing Kit right now from the Xbox website, which includes a checklist of accessories, various item tags, and the ability to write a custom message to include in the box. Cool idea if you ask us. They say perhaps one of the simplest things many of you can do to make a difference is to see the value and potential in older people. Quite literally, this holiday season, a time when many will be booting up a new console rather than leaving an old console to gather dust, considering giving it to an older family member, and maybe challenge them to a game or two. It could be a thing that sparks a whole new chapter in your relationship.
I mean, actually quite a fascinating idea there, and a quite a genuine and generous one as well, because instead of saying, you know, older person in your family, the only thing I couldn't pull out from this is who are they targeting? Grandparents, parents? Is it that the kids backs boxing up? I don't quite know where that's going, but it's a good idea. And, you know, to those people that are lucky enough not to need to trade a console to get a new console, quite a cool idea.
Because I think people our age, you know, we've been gaming since we were young with Nintendo and Atari, whatever. But I'm going to game as long as I can, you know.
Yeah, until my fingers lock up.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, the new kids, you know, look where they're starting from. We would be the grandparents who play with our grandkids and probably beat them up. Meanwhile, when I was a kid, my older uncle, he had no idea what he was doing.
No.
He did, and he couldn't care. And you can see, you know. So if you had somebody like that who has a little bit of interest, and there are games that are not technically difficult to learn how to play. You could play something simple with your, you know, an older relative.
Yeah, agree.
There's plenty of games like that. It is a good idea, actually.
Full kudos to them. The Reboxing Kit is a bit of a gimmick, but maybe that's the gimmick that incites you to say, actually, do you know what? Yeah, let's do this. You know, you might have the box lying around, in which case, fair enough, but if you don't, and or in conjunction with this Reboxing Kit, because a lot of the time you get someone who's not into technology something, and, you know, they rip the paper off and they're like, oh, great, you know, a Wujimi gimmick 5000, you know, brilliant. And you go and they kind of put it in the loft or under the stairs and it never gets set up. I mean, 1,000,000,000 Wii's must be still sat in grandparents' closets, just immaculate, because it seemed like a good idea at the time. But with this Reboxing Kit, I like the idea that it's like, you know, open, plug in back of TV, here in the port that looks like this, put the console here, plug in this wire here and this to there. And then, you know, it's a lot more hand-holdy. And if that gets someone, you know, let's say Johnny Littlefingers has got an Xbox Series S and he's like, awesome. And he or mum and dad think, well, this Reboxing Kit, why don't we? I just don't know. The only thing I couldn't quite get my head around is who is the recipient of this meant to be? Because I can't imagine a 70-year-old going, awesome, brilliant, an Xbox Series X. I'll be playing all the games on that. I can imagine that the kid would come round and they'd turn it on and then they might be interested, or maybe they watch Blu-rays on it, or maybe they use it as a Netflix box and then games when Johnny comes round so he doesn't have to bring his console. I like the idea. I think it's very commendable, and yeah, it's certainly newsworthy, especially on a third-rate show like this. Oh no, we're selling ourselves concept top tier, platinum, full fat show like ours. Bobby, I'm going to spring it on you because I totally forgot. Do you want to have a muse on who should win best comment of the month and who should win the Discord prize? Because I totally forgot to tell you in our preparations off air that that's what should be done. No rush. Just as the moment comes on you, let's weave it into the fabric of the show. Normally we'd put it here, but as soon as we've got here, and I totally forgot in our dry run through of the show to even mention to you that it was time, I totally forgot. So let me ask you this question. Did we miss anything? Let's face it, we probably did. Do you, dear listener, have an opinion or take on the news we missed? Bobby, if the collected masses want to get in contact with me and say, George, a reboxing kit's not a very good idea when you're trying to be recycling friendly and download an order in a box isn't sensible at all. Just put it in a bag and send it to Goodwill. I challenge you to a duel, sir. I slap you either side with a news glove, I throw it down, and I draw my sword. But if you want to get in contact and tell me that, Bobby, how would they do that?
Contact us on Twitter or Instagram, unofficialcontrollerpodcast.com. You can email us at questions@unofficialcontrollerpodcast.com, or you can join the Discord through the link on Instagram and hit up Discord and contact us there as well.
If they wanted to somehow navigate to the Discord, how would they do it?
They just go to the Unofficial Controller IG page, hit the link tree, and drop down, and boom.
At this point, though, one would expect to access a high-caliber community like ours, with all the features and everything that this show brings, like prizes, etc. Mm-hmm. You'd imagine that then they'd now have to then to input bank details. Do they need to pay for this Discord or this show?
No.
Are you kidding me?
I'm dead serious.
When Bobby's dead serious, listener, that means he's deadly serious. And that means you get access to a Discord. And one of the perks of being in the Discord is you find out first when the show launches. Before it goes up on the socials, it gets a little linky in the bidinky. A linky in the bidinky in the Discord, okay? And you know before anybody else, you can listen to the show as soon as it goes live. You normally get in a 2-hour heads up, maybe more, before it actually gets spread on the IG and the Twitter and all the other places. So, you know, bonus points. And it's free. So I really couldn't say much more than that. Now, as we move sedentary towards the feature, I have to tell you, as an Englishman now living in New York, I find American sports absolutely fascinating. Not only are they riddled with stats, which make the sport very interesting, they're also broken down into quarters, which means they're delivered in bite-sized chunks. Now, that means in between, you got time to go toilet, you got time to watch a million ads for the Gillette 6000 bladed razor, you've got enough time to even probably muse your socials. So you can give that small quarter of time your full dedication. But one thing that this breaking down into bite-sized chunks and the slow stop and start of some of the games actually lends itself to video gaming better than you could possibly imagine. Now, these sports, to an Englishman, sometimes I think a lot of English people's first introduction to American sports isn't through the traditional form of the goggle box in the corner, displaying these sports at a very strange hour of the day because of the time difference. No, a lot of people's first even sniff of an American sport is through the medium of a video game. That's right. Hailing all the way back to maybe even the early 90s, I was tempted across by the names like John Madden, NHL, and NBA. What are these strange amalgamation of letters, I would wonder? I need to find out. Pre-internet, it wasn't easy, but sometimes it was pretty obvious. National Football League, National Basketball, Basketball. What's Basketball's a great film that I really love by Matt Stone and Trey Parker, but we'll get from that. Basketball Association and the National Hockey League. Now, these sports seem strange to an Englishman. They're on the ragged edge. They're very aggressive. In fact, one of my first times playing NHL, halfway through the game, two of the armored opponents degloved and entered into what can only be described as a fight. This is a sort of thing you expect from a futuristic sport like rollerball, further lifting beyond recognition. The idea that these sports are edgy and cool. Never did we see people entering into a fight, not without getting a red card and being sent off and being a national shame across the UK's tabloid press. In America, no. It's encouraged. It's this Mad Max-style futuristic musings that left us all sort of agog, I would say, at this. Mix that in with a almost like a smorgasbord of games at the time, like Speedball 2, Blood Bowl, Mutant League, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. American sports felt very distant. And even the power of celebrity in America was able to take what should be an average sportsman and make him a global franchise. Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, the refrigerator. Never mind the colourful world of American wrestling. Over here, we had overweight stars such as Big Daddy, who would go through tired English routines doing slaps and slams. There was no open fists. There was no off-the-top rope theatrics. But when I first got exposed to the WWF, it was a smorgasbord of clowns, Mounties, and an actual dead man called The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Colourful stars. Then, when you came across them in a video game, my first experience of a WWF game, I believe, was the WWF arcade game. When you saw these stars come alive in a video game, doing all the things they needed to do to establish them as characters while also being a zany arcade game, American sports, they were almost godlike to an Englishman, Bobby. And as I matured as a man, I started to really envelop myself in the deep tactics of the NFL. It wasn't just simply throw ball and punch and kick your way to the scoreline. No, you could learn to pass the ball. You could learn to run the ball. In NBA, it wasn't just the two-on-two antics of NBA Jam where he was on fire and he was spinning and slamming that through the net and setting that on fire. No, there were tactics. It was push and counter push. It was, you know, three-pointer versus one-point risk trade-off. It was that kind of level of detail that really went to the next level. Now, I peaked, really, my interest in NFL with NFL 2K5. To this day, a game that I still have a save file on from 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my most favorite games. The way they interlap that American sports coverage with the game and presented it in a fashion that was, to me, addictive as all hell. Stats coming out my eyeballs, a mansion to bedeck with my trophies and sports memorabilia as my career through NFL sort of accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would say at that point, I dabbled in American sports games, but then what slapped me in the face harder than an American 18-wheel truck carrying concrete motorway segments, Bobby, hit me completely in the special place, Major League Baseball. This is a sport that translates to video games like no other. My pride in my team. Teams I gathered pride in that I'd never heard of before. Obviously, we've all heard of the Yankees and all that sort of jazz and the LA. No, not here. I was rooting for third tier teams. I was rooting for teams that I was getting drafted to that really should never even trouble an Englishman's vocabulary. But I was thinking, where can I get a hat? Are these real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then as I matured in that game and I got to star in a major league team, the Cincinnati Reds, for an example, I wanted to know all about the Cincinnati Reds. I wanted to know all about every facet of the game. And really, there's an Englishman's take on American sports. It was a one-man monologue. But I like to think it took you on a colourful journey of what it feels like to someone who grew up outside of the Star Spangled Banner, to grow up outside of the claws of the American Golden Eagle as it sits atop that wonderful pile of rock and stone that you've assembled as a country there in America, Bobby. And your sports are some of your finest examples of you as people, that never give up attitude. That when the chips are down and the fourth quarter's in and you've got seconds on the clock after a timeout, that the whole game could flip on a dime and go the other way. A moment that in a video game creates one of those awe-inspiring moments. It's awesome on celluloid. It's brilliant when you see it happen on the TV screen for real. But when you've made that fourth quarter turnaround with fingers on pad, Bobby, it's like an ecstasy that should be reserved for something other than a PG podcast. It's next level.
Yeah.
Now, after you've heard my one-man monologue of my thoughts of American sports, what do you think about that new take on your favorite sports that you've grown up loving in America?
I think it was beautiful.
Really?
I think it was beautiful. Yeah, it was.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, it's been an interesting journey for me. I mean, my early days of liking American sports, obviously, they were always trying to push them over here. And probably in my generation, they first got their fingers in and took off. And, you know, I remember having a pair of Miami Dolphin boxer shorts. And for that reason, I supported the Miami Dolphins for years until I got a Green Bay Packers goat in the mid-90s and then was like, yeah, I'm Green Bay Packers. Although, you know, my NFL 2K5 save is of my Miami Dolphins run to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful experience. Wonderful experience. So, yeah, and obviously the WWF got a really strong hold in here because the Brits loved to wrestle. But the Brits' own wrestling sort of tailed off TV and ended up in, instead of filling the Albert Hall, it was struggling to fill a Methodist chapel in you know, Wigston. It was dead. But the WWF was playing to packed stadiums every week when you tuned into it. It was beyond anything that a wide-eyed young Englishman could imagine.
Yeah, because as far as wrestling, especially in the 80s and 90s, they just seemed like superheroes, right?
Yeah.
And what happened was the basic moves looked like it could hurt you. So then when I did a special move, it was like, oh my God, like he did a special move and it was intense.
Yeah.
And then you had the traditional good guys, bad guys, and then you had the anti-heroes and, you know, all that changed after the Attitude Era when I fell off, because what happens is they want so much realism that now the special moves are regular moves and they're going and they're doing crazier moves now, which is, well, it takes for me, at least it took the fun out of it, because now you know it's fake, you know, and now they really have to act it out like a scene in a movie for you to be entertained. And if it goes right, yeah, it's good. It's great. You're flipping around and doing all that. But if it's going wrong, it can be very boring.
Mm.
And I think they're trying to sexualize it more to get more of the viewers back, because it's kind of dropped off a little bit.
I think what they realized is after the Attitude Era, and after that, they had something that was either self-penned or given the name by fans called the Ruthless Aggression Era. They kind of probably realized that, what's the one-up from this? It's slamming someone through 16 flaming tables.
Yeah.
And then the one-up from that is 20 flaming tables. And they realized that they couldn't carry on like that. So they had to knock the sport right back down to fundamental basics. So when then you do
that's
slam...
When it looks, that's when it's like, oh, this is kind of boring now.
Yeah. So they,
compared
they've had
to what
to,
they were doing.
As a brand, they've had to come all the way back down so they can go back up again.
Yeah.
But I think they've learned the art. They have a lot of British wrestlers in the background there now that obviously in British wrestling, the art of the storytelling has to be more prevalent, because you can't do a stupid high jump in a Methodist chapel, because you can't, you'd break your spine on the light fixtures, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So they've incorporated a lot more of the slow lock-to-lock storytelling. Don't get me wrong, it still lights up and whatnot, and I haven't watched it. I had a phase of getting back into it around sort of 2015, 2016, and then I sort of drifted off again. But yeah, let's break out of this, Bobby, and head to the comments, our listeners' comments. Every week we reach out to our listeners and we ask them their opinion on the topic of the week. This week it's an Englishman's take on American sports. Some got it, some read the question, some didn't, but we will pick those out for fun when we do.
So up next, we got Finsta Gamer.
I wonder if I should do Finsta Gamer.
Ah, yeah, you're right. Go ahead. I see.
I see it. Okay.
I see it.
Apparently, last week was a riot. They loved that one. But You've got to capture magic in a bottle, haven't you? Vince the Gamer says, I loved Backbreaker on Xbox 360 and PS3. It was an off-brand third-person American football game that had great ragdoll physics, and the camera followed the ball from player to player as you passed it. That's actually a really good idea and kind of solves that problem that you would normally have in a first-person sports game. So,
yeah. See, you know, for me, I played Madden on the Genesis, you know, up to whatever it went to PlayStation. Then I kind of fell off. Then I played it back on PS2. I like football, but I never really enjoyed the games. So, like, when I played NFL Blitz in the arcade, that was amazing. Because, you know, now it's like, that's what you want. You want fast-paced action. Some of the EA Sports are so sim-like. It's like, it can get a little bit boring. Unless you have a really good, you know, player two or computer. So my brother would wipe the floor at me. So it kind of got boring after a while. Because he knows all the audibles and everything. But when Backbreaker came out, that was awesome. Even NFL Blitz. No, NFL. It's not Blitz. I think I forgot what it's called, but it's Lawrence Taylor's on the cover.
Right.
There's two of them. Oh, Blitz the League, I believe it's called.
Okay.
They had, like, you do a hard tackle. And if you kept tackling that same area of the leg or the arm on the shoulder, it would go into like a break, like an X-ray type of style.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah.
Would see the arm break. You would see the leg break. And then that guy would be out of the game. And that'll totally change the gameplay. So those are the kind of football games that I enjoy now, like especially Mutant Football League. That just, you know, it's like the spiritual successor.
Yeah.
That game is great. I'd rather play those than an actual Madden game now. I lost it, though. I lost the fun for it.
Well, our next listener comments, someone who's obviously very keen on Madden. What have you got to say? What's he got to say for himself, Bobby?
So, Mr. Graham.C, he says, has to be Madden NFL for me. Been a huge fan since I was about 10 or so, 20 years. From the Mega Drive to the PlayStation and the Xbox, I played a lot of Madden. Plus, it's the only time my dad has ever played a sports game with me, which was Madden 92. And one of my players got injured, and it used to show the ambulance coming into the pitch and ran over most of the team just to get to the injured player. And my dad was laughing so hard. Those were the best. I'm telling you, the 16-bit Madden games seem more lifelike and real than the ones now, despite, you know, the graphical upgrades, obviously.
Yeah.
It was an amazing time back then.
The graphics on the PS3, you know, for me, blew me away. At the time, what was going on the PS2, I remember going back to it again, a well-trodden hole here, but I'm going to keep treading in it. NFL 2K5, you know, I had that on a screen on my PlayStation 2, as I've recounted many times, when I used to live away, go away a lot, all around the world. And that was my special place. I would get in my bed, I would set that up, and I would play it, and I would get sucked into the world. Like when you went when you went away for a match, it would show the fans outside with the trailer down and a load of cool boxes, and they'd be sort of cheering, and the sort of commentator would be like, here we are live at the Houston Huger Dome. Look at the fans outside as they gather around. And it would then go inside, and then it would do all the fades of the ESPN TV. After the match, you got like a breakdown of that weekend well, where it'd be like, going north, we've got, you know, whatever versus whatever. And then they'd get to your match and you'd be like all excited. And then they'd show the league and the table and the road to the Super Bowl and everything. And it just pulled me in. And I was like, this is fantastic.
I think the 2K NFL games were light years better than EA's.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that the NFL does not allow anyone else to make them anymore.
Yeah, agreed. I mean,
because
they did college football to try and carry it on, didn't they? And that was still phenomenal, but it wasn't enough. I mean, maybe in the US that probably had a bit more about it. But,
no, because the reason why you couldn't use the athlete's name.
Oh.
Because they don't get paid.
Of course.
So they would just put quarterback number 7. So it kind of took out, oh, well, is this the guy from Notre Dame? You know, is it him, or is it just the generic number 7? So, you know, the best thing about that was you could use the mascots to play, which was funny. But it didn't pick off like, you know, the NFL players. But I think EA just does the bare minimum.
I mean, incorporated. To say that they haven't moved on would be unfair to EA.
No, they have. They have, but they're not pushing it. Like 2K, like you said, you would have that whole little scene and it gets you pumped up for the game. And it's like, they're not doing that no more. That,
which I like,
that I know.
MLB does it with like real world footage of the stadium from outside. And
yeah, and it really changes the dynamic of, oh, I'm just going to play a baseball, you know, a sports game, and boom, here comes the two teams.
Yeah.
There's a whole feel for it, which I think is incredible.
Yeah, it captures the...
It's a shame because they made a Doug Flutie football game done by like three people. So, you know, for a three-people team, it's great. But it's fake teams just and real football. No one's buying it, which is a shame.
Well, here's a man, an Italian man in England, talking about an American sport. But I got the chance to go to London to see the Yankees versus the Red Sox. And I had an amazing time. My girlfriend got me tickets, much like Bada Bingster, we were about to read. And I took my son, and it was amazing. It went on long as well. So it was a bit of a late one, and it was a bit nerve-wracking getting across London to the hotel and other bits and bobs. But let's not get waylaid. Here he is, Bada Bingster Retro Gaming.
Last year, my other half surprised me with MLB tickets in London. So, however, due to COVID, we had to cancel. So I decided to give MLB the Show a go, and I found it a really fun, but it wasn't for me. I think it's too slow. I'm used to faster-paced spots to games like the FIFA, even dipped a bit into Madden across the years, but never really enjoyed them. So I really any try to some of the old basketball games as some of the SNES releases are supposed to be fun. Everybody stand for the national anthem, sir. And there's no national anthem, so you're not playing it.
No, not this week. Not this week, Madam Minister.
Okay, sir. Everybody sit down for the national anthem, sir. Game of controller emoji and trophy emoji, sir. Trophy for you, trophy for me. We win us, sir. Yes, you and me together. May I recommend some deer meat, sir?
Fantastic. Okay. Deer meat, aka venison. He finds MLB a little slow. I love that about it. I like the fact that it's almost a one-hand game. You know, you could sit there just sort of smashing it off and the stats would roll in and you could do the pitches. Now, MLB's got like two styles of pitching you can do. You can do the one-hand pitch where it's just a very easy button press and you just decide where in the square you want it to go. Mm-hmm. And depending on the strength of your pitch, it depends the accuracy of where it went. So you might end up with some out. You might end up some in. Normally, if you do it that way, you don't end up with any walks, or you limit your walks and you can limit your runs. If you're playing it with the traditional sort of strength meet like a golf game, it can be quite hard, you know, because you're often walking people and you're loading the bases and you're like, oh no, please no. And then someone gets a hit and they all go running in and it ends up like 4-0 and you're like, ah! But for the most part, you know, enjoyable. And I think MLB translates, especially... Now, here's some news. Obviously, for many years, MLB was an exclusive Sony PlayStation title. Mm-hmm. And they poured their heart and soul into it, like their other exclusives, like Uncharted and Ratchet and Clank and Last of Us and all that, and God of War. And that studio really made a fantastic sports game. Now, the MLB got their arm up the back and said, if you want to keep this franchise, you're going to have to now make it for other platforms. Sony went away and thought, well, we don't want to lose the franchise because we know it's big tickets for us, even in America. It sells us a lot of PlayStations. So, okay, we'll make it for the Xbox as well. So an Xbox version's coming out. What I would say is, Xbox gamers, don't waste this opportunity. I don't say this lightly, but getting MLB on the Xbox is almost, in my eyes, because the amount of time they've put into refining that product and making it what it is today, it's almost like them getting God of War. That's how passionate I feel about it. Then suddenly it's like, yeah, we're going to make God of War for the Xbox. For me, MLB is that significant that they're almost making it, they're almost making an exclusive of high renown for the Xbox. And I really hope that it actually sells on Xbox. I just wonder if it's not renown enough. In the UK, it's a bit of a cult if you play MLB. In America, probably loads of young kids, you know.
So maybe, we're on two different boats.
I don't like it.
I think baseball games are the most boringest video game I've ever played in my life.
Oh my God.
I absolutely despise them. And I loved baseball growing up.
Yeah.
And once I started doing analytics, baseball for me became extremely boring.
Oh, man.
Because when I was growing up, they played small ball, they played hard ball, hit the home runs, they stole bases. Now it's all analytics. So you have a home run hitter in the second spot because, you know, analytics. It ruins the sport for me. So baseball, for me, the games were always boring. I loved Ken Griffey's Jr. on Super Nintendo. That was amazing. And I really liked MLB Slugfest, which was like the Midway Blitz, NFL Blitz version.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fun because they're fast-paced.
Yeah.
This MLB, I play with my brother, and we played in retro mode, which is kind of like Ken Griffey Jr. style.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's fun.
It's more like PS1 style graphics, isn't it? I always think that retro mode.
Yeah, they definitely bring it down to that era. But like, you know, more refined, but it's simple. Yeah. Like, you know, X square, boom, simple. So it's simple enough where you can play. But after two games, I'm like, bro, I'm done. And if I don't ever play it again, that's fine with me. I hate baseball games.
You see, I can turn that on in the morning.
I'd still never
be playing it in the morning, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It goes on and on and on. And the Road to the World Series, trying to get your players, like, you in it, you create a player. And then, you know, the way I play it is you create your player, you go for the tryouts. And let's say your favorite team's the Yankees. You might not even get draft pick for the Yankees mm-hmm. sort of promotional team at all. You might not even feature on the radar. So you end up getting drafted to another team, and then you end up in their promotional leagues, and then end up playing for a team you never even thought about. Mm-hmm. But then as you get your player, you want him to be, I always play as a pitcher. I never, you know, so I very rarely bat. So I'm not that good about him. For me, baseball's about the pitcher. I find that he's the guy who controls the game. He's the guy who either can stop the runs from the other players, you know, and that 100% really is,
agree with you.
That's 100%. What consolidates, because you always see the Aaron Judges and whatnot and Giancarlo Stantons, they come out and they can smack a ball really hard, and that gives them almost like they're more promotable in the game.
Yeah, because it's the most exciting thing to do, hit a home run. It's exciting.
But
in reality, you get a good pitcher throwing strikeouts, especially, you know, caught looking strikes. It's amazing to watch in reality.
Yeah.
I love the pitching, always.
For me, that's the most fascinating part about baseball. Mm-hmm. So I like when do you want to pitch? Like, do you want to pitch? Yes. Do you want to bat? Not at all. And every now and then, because of the way the game's gone, I end up in bat.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about the MLB series on PlayStation now, PS4 and soon to be PS5 and Xbox Series S and X, is the commentary is so slick and good now. It is so good. Like, repeatable lines.
I heard they added like 250,000 more dialogue lines.
Oh.
For almost every situation.
Yeah.
You're never going to hear, you know, oh, he stole second. It'll be a completely different scenario depending who stole it, how they stole it.
Yeah. What I really liked about the MLB is they've got like, these later games have got like three people in the commentary box
mm-hmm.
all bouncing off each other. It's like they'll bring up stats about this one guy. Like, this guy's, you know, famous for hitting the three bar, you know, three runs and all that sort of stuff. And then they detail down on it, and then, you know, how he's going to fare versus the pitcher. And then something will happen and it'll be like, oh, and they'll bring in a line. It's fantastic.
And I believe, now I don't know for sure, but I think my brother told me if you actually break a record, like in the game, like you stole, I don't know, X amount of bases, I think it even says it.
Yes, it does.
And then it brings up like, oh, you broke this guy's record for X amount of whatever. So I think that's pretty cool that they do that. Because some games don't even acknowledge it. Like,
no, I was playing as a pitcher and I got, I think I had a clean game. You know, no one hit mm-hmm. any runs at all.
Perfect game.
Yeah, perfect game. And that was like, you know, he's two off the perfect game at this point. And it's like,
oh. Yeah, you see, that's...
But then the pressure started to build. And I was like,
that's how it really is. I'm telling you, I mean, I'd rather watch a perfect game or two pitchers going at it than a slugfest. Yeah, the slugfest is exciting. But when you think about it, what's the more skill, bro? Like, I struck you out twice now. This is your third and final attempt. But, you know, come on, come up here. I'll throw you a curve. See ya.
Perfect.
Sit down. Yeah.
Well, someone who likes to throw us curves, he's a fellow redhead. Do you want to give him some words, Bobby?
Ginger's Game Room. He says, I played Madden on my Xbox 360, and apart from being a ginger and having no friends, it was the worst experience of my life.
There's a troubled young man, if ever.
I mean, listen, you're playing sports by yourself. That's already off to a bad start. It's a sports game, you know? You should have a buddy playing it. You know, damn, I feel bad.
Well,
but I know what it's like to be a redheaded stepchild, so, you know.
Well, someone who doesn't know what it's like to be a redheaded stepchild, the ever handsome The Dale Mills on Instagram, fresh off the Caffeine Express, he says, Joe Montana Sports Talk football on the Mega Drive. The commentary was amazing. Laugh till I cry emoji.
I never played that one.
No, me neither. So I take it.
And I noticed nobody mentioned, we got one person I mentioned. Okay. I'll do this one.
Okay. Who we got?
Digital Monkery.
Oh.
I think, like quite a few people my age, my first experience of American sports and games came in EA Ice Hockey and Madden Double Cartridge. Mm. Everything I know about ice hockey comes from that game. Soviet Union are still one of the strongest teams in the world, yeah? And it's possibly one of the main reasons why I continue to play ice hockey games for years, despite not enjoying them as much, that first experience. Instigating fights, being as much a part of the game as scoring. Madden, couldn't ever get into it. Same as the real sport, just doesn't interest me. Other than that, the only one that sticks to my mind is a basketball game on the PlayStation. No idea which one. It was fun enough, but ruined by my friend at the time, knowing the game far better than me and scoring three-pointers from the same sweet spot repeatedly. Mm. While I could only score dunks with Shaq. So ultimately, ice hockey good, others bad. For me, ice hockey and soccer. Well, you guys, football. Yeah. It's the epitome of the greatest sports games ever made. Okay? When EA made this regular NHL hockey with 92, that was an amazing game. But you couldn't have the real players. It was just the team. Then you had NHLPA 93, which you couldn't have the real team, just the players. And then when NHL 94 came out, that was the damn near perfect hockey experience, okay?
Yeah.
I went when around 98 to 2008, I went 10 years without losing one NHL 94 game. I could not be beaten. I took this to work. We went to a high school. I think I mentioned in my other podcast. We took, you know, those old TVs that were on the stand with the strap?
Yeah.
We pulled it out, and I played anyone who wanted to play me in this game for a whole, 12 hours. Nobody came close. So I love hockey games. I played every single one of them. So my favorites are 94, 2000, 2006, 2012, and this last one, 20. Not the best, but very fun. Especially, they have this new thing called NHL 3s. So it's very more arcade.
Yeah.
But the regular one still, like if you hit somebody, like you feel the hit. You know, his helmet might fall off, the stick might fall off, his puck flies. But I remember playing 93 with my friend, my boy Alec. We played this all the time. And the first time he hit me in such a way that my player fell back on the floor. Usually they get injured and they like cry like babies on the back. And then you go to the penalty box or whatever. But one time he hit me and my player bled from his head. And I've never seen that before.
Wow.
And I was like, my God, he's bleeding. You know, so there was this big thing where you try to hurt Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
But the thing with the trick is there's a check button. Okay. You can't check Wayne Gretzky in this game. It just doesn't happen. But if you go up to Wayne Gretzky and just do the stick poke at the right time, you can destroy Wayne Gretzky. And he always wanted to be the Kings. So we made this random rule where we just played random teams. It didn't matter. Okay. I had the Tampa Bay Lightning, which was the worst team in the league at that time, because it was an expansion team, and he had the Eastern All-Stars.
Oh God!
I destroyed him 12-0. Absolutely wrecked him. I love hockey games. They're just fast-paced. They're good. The way the crowd reacts to it, the way you're on the home team and you're scoring and they're booing you. They had all the licensed songs from each stadium or each team.
Yeah.
Amazing experience. Same thing with FIFA. I think just how they do that too. FIFA might be a little bit more arcade now, but I remember back then that was like the most realistic sim, but fast paced game ever. I just think they really get the sport. Whereas other games are like stop and go, this is continuous, man. Nothing's really stopping unless the puck goes out or.
Yeah. He talks there about basketball games. And if you can find that sweet spot just on the 3-point edge, right on the sort of goal line, as it is called,
cheating.
You can normally get a three-pointer every single time on any basketball game if you get it right.
Basketball, no, not really. Before, EA used to make just Jordan or the Bulls versus games, whatever. But they were too sim-like. So NBA Jam, for me, was amazing. I think that game was great.
I love NBA Jam. Yeah. There's one NBA 2K on the place, on the Dreamcast as well, which is obviously part of what became ESPN UK, is a fantastic game. And I still enjoy it. It's super hard because it is very simmy. But the one I really got into, and I've collected the full set on PlayStation, was Total NBA. Really? On the PlayStation 1. The first one looks pretty... They all look pretty pretty wonky now, but for the time, they looked amazing. There were squeaks as you moved around on the floor, on the wood floor from the trainers. It was the full team as well instead of 2-on-2.
There's
reflection in the floor, which I've never been able to do before. And when you play it now, it's like they're very polygonal characters, but it was the first full 3D game. And I think they probably reached their height. I've got a cardboard sleeve, Total NBA 98, I believe it is. And it's got an actual piece of basketball. I had this when it launched, and I've recently managed
That's
to
crazy.
Acquire it. It's got an actual piece of basketball, orange basketball on the front with Total NBA on it. Yeah, mate. And it's one of my prized possessions. I never played
any basketball games besides NBA Jam.
I was looking to tell you what the name was in America, and it's called... Because here it was called Total NBA in the States. And this was a PlayStation exclusive because it was developed by the team that went on to create, I think the studios amalgamated, and I think they had something to do with the Getaway in the end. And they made Porsche Challenge as well. So they were very much making early sort of really pushing the PlayStation games. Mm-hmm. But in the States, it's called NBA Shootout.
Okay.
Don't know if that jogs any memories. If not, don't worry about it.
Well, I think basketball games... look the best graphically.
Yeah, I think we might have said this before.
Yeah, they're always trying to push it to like the max limit. Like
the latest one on and they always do a good trailer for sports games as well.
Yes, they do.
Baskets or you're hitting the home run in time with like the beat of the music, and it's like, wow, this is amazing. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they've done one recently for the latest NBA game on Xbox and PlayStation. And now the crowd are almost now. I saw it on the PS4 and was like, yeah, it's cool. I've always had a passing interest in it, but I've always been put off by some of the microtransactions which are in it now. And then I saw the PS5 version where each individual member of the crowd now looks like a model from a PlayStation 3 game. And they all jump up and react differently. And when you see them side by side, the cardboard cut out to the 3D sort of high polygon count. And I was like, that is. But every time every time an NBA game launches, I remember when like the PS3 and the 360 launched, probably more the PS3 that I actually noticed it because it was promoted with it, because I think it was like one of the launch games. You saw like these characters and like, it can't, that classic scene, the graphic, it can't get any better than this.
It's the peak. It's unbelievably true.
Every time. Whereas in an outdoor sport, I suppose you've got to animate the skybox, whereas you can just make it black in an NBA game. The crowd isn't as big, so you've got more polygons reserved for the players. There's less players on the field.
I didn't think about that. That's actually, very smart. I didn't think about that at all.
But every single time, the basketball game is the one that's like, you know, well, I don't rate much to this new console that you spent $500 on. Well, let me put this in. Oh, bloody hell.
It's so true.
That's pretty amazing, that is. You can see the sweat on his face. Like, yeah, oh yeah. You can see the disconcerted look of that crowd member. Yeah, you're right. You can now. So,
before this becomes an NHL podcast, let me just say, we ended here. NHL 2000, if you don't have it, that's fine. If you could YouTube, the intro to NHL 2000 has Push It by Garbage, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if that doesn't get you pumped up for life, bro, I don't know what is. Just how they start with the hockey drop and the spotlight, and then all of a sudden it goes to like the real players and like the biggest hits of that of the 99 season and the song that plays through it. Oh my God. And that really, they really put that into the game, because when you hit somebody in NHL 2000, bro, you think they're dead.
Wow.
Like I amazing.
I need to check what hockey games I've got, because I've got them on the 16-bit for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've got the one I want. I've got like maybe the first one where it's the mm-hmm. national teams rather than the American League teams. So it's mm-hmm. EA Hockey rather than NHL Hockey and a number. Now, I remember having NHL Hockey 92 on the Super Nintendo. I didn't know anything about it, but yeah. it looked so realistic at the time, much like these games did at 16, but I needed it. And obviously I knew that you could get in fights mm-hmm. and I knew that halfway through the game, is it the Zambuzi or whatever it comes on and cleans yep. the ice? And it's like, wow, that's so real. It didn't look real at all. It was an amalgamation of like dots on the screen, but it was at the time cutting edge. Talking to someone who's cutting edge and whose comments are starting to become very long, but very all-encompassing. Every emotion you could possibly imagine captured in the Irish Beast comment. It's C. Pliskin's turn in the seat. Again, it's my turn to put words in his mouth. I think he tried to trip me up, but let's see if we can get through this unscathed. Damn it, you're picking all the hard ones for me. I honestly don't care much about sports. My mother loves rugby, and she said that the only thing she regrets is not getting me hooked on it. Good job she wasn't into crack, see Pliskin, that she'd be in trouble. Usually speaking in video game format, I do prefer the more over-the-top sports games, rather than like the Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games series, or... You're right, Bobby. Here I go again, SSX tricky. But on top of the topic of Mario and personal nostalgia, my favourite sports games would be Mario Strikers Charged Football, aka Charged, for you silly Americans. This was the one of the first games I got for my Wii in, I believe, the Christmas of 2006. When I'm trying to explain it, there doesn't seem like much to it. Sort of similar to the NFL Blitz. Strikers basically dishes away the rules of football, not American football, because we actually use our feet for more than 10% of the match, in favor of being able to use power-ups like various colored shells. Having the ability to shoulder tackle opponents into questionably dangerous electric fences and having matches in locations like a crystal cavern that randomly eliminates team players at the start of each kickoff or in a desert with thwomps everywhere. However, uniquely of all that separates this from most other Mario and sports games alike is its personality. All of the captains of each team have their own unique persona that are emoted both when they win, stroke score a goal, but also in their losing animations. Mario having a hard rock solo while doing flips, Luigi having a Spanish guitar with accompanying clapping sounds, Peach having a lot of techno influences in her theme and being an absolute diva in front of the cameras, and my absolute favourite, Wario, having over-exaggerated bagpipes and marching drums as he tries to get his teammates to throw his fat ass into the air. It's really one of those sub-series that I hope Nintendo returns to know that they own the devs of this duology. Next level games, and small anecdote, one day I was watching one of my cousins play FIFA, and I said, "Don't worry, I have faith in you." Right before the enemy team scored, he was devastated, to which I responded saying, "Well, I had faith in you, but still." Great comment. I'm glad that your mum didn't get you into Class A narcotics and rugby was the choice there. She didn't get you into it, but certainly sounds like you've got yourselves very deep into Mario Strikers.
No, Mario Strikers is absolutely phenomenal. If they just released Mario Strikers from the Wii and just ported to the Switch, I'd buy that day one. I love that game. Especially with a friend, it's nonstop, fast-paced action. It's super awesome. We played that all night at my friend's house on the GameCube. We had it on the GameCube. Sorry, I know there's one on the Wii. I never played that one, but I would definitely buy that day one. They need to do something with that.
I don't think I've ever played it, but
it's so awesome.
Let me tell you, C. Pliskin's comments got me intrigued. In one of the rooms here, we have a Wii set up all the time because it's just a grab-and-go console. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd managed to get together all of the games, but maybe I've just missed Mario Strikers. Oh, bro,
your kids would love it. Your kids would absolutely love it. It's awesome, dude. Just make sure you got a memory. You need a memory. What is it called? They have memory sticks, right, or something like that for the GameCube?
Whatever. No, this is we've got a Wii set up.
You have the save thing on it, or there's a save file, right?
Oh, I suppose if you're playing a GameCube game backwards compatibly on the Wii, you need to plug the control, and there is slots at the top for a memory.
Yeah, see, I don't have everything I do never counts.
Yeah,
and I was always trying to buy a memory card for it because you know you can unlock certain characters after a certain amount of time. But bro, you have a great time with the kids on. For sure.
Have you picked a winner yet, or do you want to muse on it till next week? You can muse on it till next week if you'd like.
Okay, I think I have an idea, but then I guess we'll talk about it after.
Okay, so should we announce it next week?
Yeah. Or we could do it. Sure. 100%.
What, next week?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not rush it, because I don't want them to think that we just picked this out of the air. I want them.
No,
want
it's
them
not. To. I have two. Not sure if they've ever won, but I have two for sure.
Okay. And then obviously we need to pick a Discord. Oh, so you've got one for the comment and one for the Discord, and we need to discuss, and then we can announce next week. Yeah, fair enough. I think it's to give the gravitas to the prize and the comment, it needs to be mused on, doesn't it? I always feel so.
Yeah, I'm not just picking it from a bag. Like, I'm looking all the time.
Yeah, because it's the content, the high level of content that we're encouraging, and it's the high level of just nice man personship on the Discord that we want to promote to keep it healthy and populated environment. Mm-hmm. So to all those that participate, both in the comments every single week and the high caliber of comment that we get, don't worry, keep commenting. Not only will you comment eventually make it on air, but you keep coming with statistically high comments and you're going to win a prize. If you want to then migrate over to Discord, or if you're not in the Discord already and you just fancy making a group of friends and being a decent person, that puts you right slap bang in the middle of winning an unofficial controller mug. It really doesn't get any better than that. Young adult man.
Mm-hmm.
What's he got to say for himself, Bobby?
Man, I clearly remember playing NBA Jam. I love seeing the basketball on fire with a fire emoji. To be honest, that was the only sports game at the time that was really fun. I hated other sports games, especially that golf game for the NES. Time passed and parents had purchased an N64 for us. We loved playing a variety of games. One that always had me on the edge of my bed was NFL Blitz, I think it was called, which is, yeah, he's correct. That game was hilariously funny. I loved how you could beat up the other teams. I thought it was funny how you could, it was a sports game / beat 'em up type of game. Other than that, I haven't really played any other sports game.
Mm.
Yeah, Blitz was fun.
I mean, it's those arcade ones that seem to be sticking in people's throats, like NBA Jam, etc. So, fair play. Up next, Comic Picture 79. He doesn't sound happy this week. He says, not a fan, I'm afraid. Haven't watched wrestling for many years, and I don't really even care for rugby, so NFL doesn't do it for me. Same with baseball, really. I don't have anything against it, but I'd rather have a picnic and play rounders with the kids. I've really enjoyed watching some of their Olympians over the years because I love the Olympics and especially the games, but it's not really an American sport, is it? I don't want to sound like a negative Nelly, but I'm not into lacrosse either. But for me, the best sports games have always been football, golf, and Olympics. Maybe a bit of boxing or a multi-sport like Steep or California Games. That Riders Republic looks good. Riders Republic does look good. Steep was phenomenal. It was just, that's the skiing, snowboarding game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit impenetrable at times. Like all of those games, you kind of get installed a little bit to play, but you don't get the whole mountain. And it felt like it took about 2 weeks to install on my machine. Every time I went to it, it was still installing. So I never really, and then I was just like, nah, I can't be doing with this. So I sacked it off. But each to his own. California Games is a phenomenal game. I always loved that. I remember my cousin had it on the Master System. And I always begged to play it because I'd never seen anything as realistic as the keepy-uppy with the beanbag and all that sort of stuff.
No, I'm shocked I haven't seen yet. What? On his comments, Skate or Die, Tony Hawk.
Yeah, because that's an American sport. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see it. In fact, one of the best sport films I've seen is Z Boys or something like that, Lords of Dogtown, about the origins of skateboarding as we know it. Because previously, skateboarding wasn't, you know, when they did tricks, they were in and out of cones rather than doing like jumps in the air and stuff. And it was these Lords of Dogtown who were surfers who started building boards and surfing in empty swimming pools during the off season for surfing. And that film, I watched it on a plane somewhere and I was like, this is a really great film. Really, really enjoyed it. So I implore everyone to just give that a Google to get the name right and check it out. Who's next out the bag of tricks, my friend?
Got Eslo and Medina.
It's Eslo and Midna.
I will never say that right.
Call it wrong. So what do you want to call him now? Eslo and Midna.
Yeah, where did I get Medina from?
I don't know, but that's what his name is now.
That's fine. Love the John Madden games from EA and the Mega Drive in the early 90s. I had so many hours of those. Madden 92 consumed a whole summer of mine, and I still see it as time well spent. I'll try not mad at you. NBA Jam was another terrific game from the 16-bit era. In retrospect, perhaps, the time I spent skydiving off college to pay for it wasn't so well spent, but it's unmatched for arcade style with two basketball emojis.
Awesome. He says skiving. Is that an American word that you've heard of before?
Oh, I read that wrong too. I don't know what that is.
It's like when you wag off school. You don't go in, you go do something else. We call it here skiving. If you don't do your work, you're skiving.
Oh.
So if you take a sick day from work for a new console, you've skived off.
Oh.
You call it wag off school. We might also call it wag off.
No, we used to call it cutting class.
Cutting class. We call it skiving. School. Skiving.
And then now I can't think of the word would you use when you call out sick to play video games. There's a word for it. I have to think of it before the show's over.
Okay. All right. Guess what, El Buccio? You're running low on speedboats, but that doesn't stop them coming. We've got a new
listener.
Retro Gene. He just says Dead Ball Zone. Now, I haven't heard of this.
Me neither.
So I shall research it. Someone else, Brett himself, says Nagano Winter Olympics 98 for N64. Me and the boys spent many an evening getting our curl on. Winter Olympics, I suppose they're more an American sport, aren't they? But one would imagine the sport didn't originate in America, but you know, whatever he needs. Race Space Monk, I shall take this one. I shall take this. Our favourite Doogie, the father of Game Boy Matty.
Wasn't it his birthday? It was Adam's birthday too.
I know, but they all passed me by. So happy birthday, Race Space Monk. I think happy birthday, Adam. Mm-hmm. Was it even Boba Labor's birthday as well or something?
No, it was mine.
Your birthday as well. It was your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thanks, bro.
I'm a bad dad.
We're the Aquarius boys.
You're the what?
The Aquarius boys.
The Bicurious Boys. Roast Space Monk. He says, favorite basketball games are NBA 2K on the Dreamcast, Man After My Own Heart, and NBA Jam on pretty much all consoles. I think 2K holds up really well, even 20 years later. Yes, it does fantastically well. If only that had more of a sort of story, sort of career mode in it, where it had more behind the scenes stuff going on, you know, and build up promo stuff, that would make that perfect. The new 2K games don't do it for me. I like the more simplistic gameplay of the original. NBA Jam is a fantastic game, especially with a friend. Boom, shakalaka, he says. I'd also pick up Mutant League Hockey on the Mega Drive. Don't think I've played a basketball game other than Wii Sports, to be honest, but I've heard the show is a fantastic series. Yeah, I mean, to me it is, but to Bobby it's not his. I could talk for hours about wrestling games, so I'll keep this brief. No Mercy is the greatest wrestling game of all time, hands down. Now, I like No Mercy.
That's the one with the Rock, on the cover?
Yeah. And I also like WWF WrestleMania by the same company. But the game that I always wanted that company to make a wrestling game of the WWF. But now when I look back, I have fonder memories of WCW versus NWO. I spent hours on that, whereas by the time WrestleMania finally launched, WrestleMania 2000 finally launched, and by the time No Mercy came out, I'd sold my N64 for a Dreamcast. It was gone. Mm. So like, I understand No Mercy is the greatest wrestling game. And I have like retrospectively bought an N64 and played the wheels off No Mercy. I absolutely have. But WrestleMania was the one that I put most hours into of that franchise. And the one I played and pretended was WWF more, and now end up having sort of retrospective feelings for it, was WCW versus NWO. Now you've brought that game up. You've brought that game up before, Bobby.
I love both of them. They're both excellent games.
Yeah.
Just depending on what you like more. You like WCW, you like WWF. I mean, to me, those are the greatest.
Still,
I mean,
to this day,
if you really do want a really awesome game and you have a co-op partner, you have a friend, and you make a story, that Fire Pro Wrestling is absolutely fantastic. Bro, there are websites where you can download a save file to put it into your PS2. I think it's for now PS4, but I don't know how you would do it. But I have it on the PS2. And I had an old save file where you downloaded the entire rosters for WWF, WCW, ECW, because they don't have the license of the characters.
No, they don't. So they're either they
named them all, and they have Hulk Hogan shorts. It's just not Hulk Hogan. So these people created every single wrestler, and you just have them in each division.
I think one day we'll do a wrestling special. We'll get Tom on because me and him have like a real affinity for the. We always used to play each other on those.
Yeah, Fire Pro Wrestling is great.
I had Fire Pro Wrestling on the Dreamcast actually in Japanese, which was almost unnavigable. When you finally got into the game, it was amazing. But it was a little bit impenetrable to me because it was you didn't know what you were picking. You didn't know how you were, you know, you didn't know what game, what version you were playing and what the rules were. So it was a bit harder. I did actually manage to find like one of those ASCII guides on, you know, where it's all in ASCII script on like game facts from back in the day. I think I actually did find a translation guide and that helped me get a little bit more into it. But Fire Pro, interesting series, good series. Mm-hmm. But for me, the game that surpassed them all, and it's not new, don't get me wrong, and has become cemented as my favorite wrestling game of all time, because it's got a bit more of everything, and it's got this random, what feels like random story creation in it as well, is Here Comes the Pain on the PlayStation 2. Still looks great. Mm. It's a little bit more fast-paced than No Mercy, but you're able to slow the match down if you use the right moves, and... Yeah, rightly or wrongly, that has sort of surpassed it. Because the career mode just got more teeth to it. You know, stuff happens. You get feuds going on. Whereas No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000, they're great games. The playability is there, but they're a bit bare bones.
We used to make our own stories and then fight each other.
Perfect.
Yeah, like, so for me, and WWE was NWO, No Mercy, and then the arcade WWF game. The arcade game was... I mean, bro, it was awesome, especially back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. As it's a bit more beat 'em up now, that game, than an actual what I would call
exactly.
Lock to lock wrestling game. Mm-hmm. Whereas WCW and No Mercy and etc., they were lock to lock wrestling games where if you played it right, if you knew the game as intimately as we all got to know
destroy them, or
you could make it look real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could let someone have a comeback and you could stop it in its tracks and you could take the match outside and it all played out almost the same speed as it would do on TV. And that's what made it so cool. Last comment on the subject. You said it hadn't happened. And guess what? This man's got you back. I can't pronounce his name, so it's all down to you.
Obi-Wan Atoli. _92. I could read that, but I can't read Islo and Medina.
If you did that in a Mexican voice, the Mexican Obi-Wan. Is this guy now El Bucho? I think he is.
I think he is, yeah.
Say that in a Mexican voice if you could be so bold.
Okay. He goes, well, you know, Holmes, I'm not sure if this counts, but I remember playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, 2, and 3 on my N64 away. Played hours and hours on end, way. And when one summer... I played throughout all the series with my best friend at the time, Way. This was back in the 5th or 6th grade, Way. We called the house phone and we chatted about how many points we racked up and whatnot, Way. Crying emoji, cerveza emoji. And well, I'm not forgetting all the WWE and WWF games in the series, Way. I loved No Mercy, WrestleMania 2000 for the N64. When I worked my way up the PS1, Way. Then my favorite game of all time with the WWE, Here Come the Pain.
My man.
With my main man, Beefy Boy, at Brock Lesnar. Those were some good times, Way. 100% emoji, clapping hands emoji.
I didn't expect the whole comment. I just wanted you to say Obi-Wan Mantola.
I was in it to win it now at that point.
Can we have Obi-Wan in Mexican? Better.
Obi-Wan Atoli, 92, right?
I was totally lost on me, but thanks for you. That whole nuance. Hopefully we didn't offend him. Hopefully like Bada Bingster, he's like, yeah, I like that. I want a piece of that. You're Mexican. It's raised the whole where you're from impersonation to...
Well, my first job was a butcher. And the guy who taught me, him and his crazy brother, were Mexicans.
Oh, I see.
So I learned about... Bro, you want tacos, you want horchata, you want like cow tongue tacos? I was like, that's disgusting. Phenomenal. Like, I was in it to win it. I thought I was Mexican. For real.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
That probably draws... I've enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. From the one-man memory monologue to the me and you sort of elating about it, and obviously, as always, curating people's memories of American sports games as we go through. I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was a good topic, one that we could only do with an American co-host. Me and Tom could never have done that show because it really wouldn't have made any sense. But getting your perspective on it really made it special. Now, I don't know what he's been doing this week. Some would say, based on the topic of the week, he's been buying up foam hands out in the trash, scraping the white paint of the team name off, and then rebadging them. Because Stingray's all about the recycle, because one man's trash is another man's treasure. But here he comes, Bobby. He tears down Fifth and Main. It's time for a peek in what we affectionately call Stingray's boot, what's nestled between some counterfeit nappies and a dodgy copy of Battle for Endor this week. These are the new release highlights for the week, February 1st, February 7th, 2021. Listeners, these are out on digital or physical, or will be by the time this podcast is in your feed, but could be. Oh, I'm not even joking at this point. They could be region-dependent. Now, grab yourselves a looky-looky through there. Have you picked a mummy-mummy, Squire?
Yeah.
You have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have I picked a mummy mummy? This first one's my mummy mummy. Control Ultimate Edition on the PS5 and Xbox Series X. Out February 2nd. It's free currently on PSN for the Ultimate Control PS5 upgraded edition. It's obviously available on PS4 with all the backwards compatibility stuff as well. And I do believe it's currently purchasable on Xbox Series X, but more than likely will come to Games Pass at some point in time. Its Control Ultimate Edition contains the main game and all the previous released expansions, the Foundation and AWE. In one great value package, winner of over 80 awards, Control is a visually stunning, no doubt, third-person action-adventure that will keep you on the edge of your seat.
Up next, which this is wild, okay? Cultist Simulator Initiate Edition, yeah. And it's for the Switch.
Yeah, I laughed.
Okay, so if you want to be Jim Crow, or Jim Jones, I'm sorry, here we go. Seize forbidden treasures, summon alien gods, feed on your disciples. Cultist Simulator is a game of apocalypse and yearning. Play as a seeker after unholy mysteries in a 1920s-themed setting of hidden gods and secret histories.
I mean,
if I ever wanted to gather a bunch of people and just have them drink the juice, the Kool-Aid, this is the game for you, apparently.
This is the game.
Go for it.
Up next, Destruction All-Stars on the PS5. February 2nd, this is also free on PSN. It was meant to be a full price buy it now game at launch, but it got delayed and then became a PSN game. I guess you need the...
And there's a reason why.
Is it pants? I don't know. It's not even scratched my interest.
Not at all. And I played it with my friend, and it's horrible.
Stars and Cars Collide dominate the glittering global phenomenon of Destruction All-Stars, a spectacular primetime sport for dangerous drivers. Master the art of intense vehicle combat based through timing, tactics, and skills to cause colossal amounts of damage, destruction, and devastation in vibrant arenas across the globe. Pile on the destruction from behind the wheel or leap into the arena with breathtaking reel of parkour action by dodging attacks, taking over vehicles, or using abilities to disrupt the onslaught of incoming vehicles. I feel like that's a game that if you design it by spreadsheet, you know, what's hot right now, Rocket League, Fortnite, and...
That's exactly what it's very similar to those two put together.
Yeah. When you build a game based on what's hot at the time, it never really ends up being...
In reality, you should just get Wreckfest.
Yes.
And play Twisted Metal, because that's what we really want.
Yeah.
A Wreckfest style for Twisted Metal, and I'm in.
I mean, it might be, maybe a young kid might get more out of that. But
you can put this game on the speedboat, little beach show, and have him dump it somewhere.
Okay, no problem.
See ya.
I have to say, it's not for me. I don't know whether, if you were a kid, you would think it was better or not. I have no idea. It's normally kids are a good barometer to whether a game's good or bad. And if they don't like it, it must be not very good. What's next, Bobby?
Luciform? For PC, February 2nd. I probably didn't say that right. I gotta say it again.
I think that's how I would have said it.
Yeah, right. Luciform is a precision platformer that demands quick reflexes and nerves of steel. Can you help Lucy navigate a dangerous forest to save its people from the nasty red-eyed gorilla? Well, certainly hope so.
Up next, Valheim, PC, February 2nd, a brutal exploration survival game for 1 to 10 players set in a procedurally generated purgatory inspired by Viking culture. Surprise, this isn't your mummy. It's got Vikings in it, for goodness sake. Battle, build, and conquer your way to a saga worthy of Odin's patronage.
If I had a PC, I'd try it.
True.
Next is Odysseus's Cosmos and his robot quest for the Switch, February 4th. Devour.
Wait.
No. We don't know what the game is, but it's on the Switch, February 4th.
You certainly don't devour a co-op horror survival game for 1 to 2 players. Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood, out on PC, PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, and Xbox One, but not the Stadia, bizarrely. February 4th, explore the myths and monsters of Europe's last primeval wilderness. Play as Maya, who arrives at the ancient Bialowiezi Forest, looking to explore her family history, discover rage in an adventure game inspired by the experience of the legendary tabletop role-playing game Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Sounds like a Polish.
I've heard that's pretty good. I actually think it might be a game that you would like. Really? You need to play Maneater, you scum-sucking pig.
Eventually. Up next, we got Kinetic Edge for the PC, February 5th. Kinetic Edge is a physics platformer-based racing game where you have to figure out the best way to overcome obstacle courses with the shape of your choice, playing your own with friends or multiplayer. I can imagine this being the Japanese style games where you have to jump through the different designs with your body.
Oh, Ninja Warrior. Yeah.
And with the conveyor belt. There's three in that. That's my picture in my mind.
Well, that probably makes it a little bit of a Fall Guys clone, doesn't it? Up next.
Oh, I messed up. My mummy, so I should read it.
If you want to, sir.
The Noah Collection.
Neo.
PS. Neo. Oh, you're right, Neo. I can't read. PS5, February 5th. Defy death and unleash your darkness in this expansive collection. Journey through Sengoku-era Japan.
They call it Sengoku.
Sengoku-era Japan. I apologize for all the Japanese listeners. But I did say that name right in the beginning of the game.
Normally your Japanese is way better than mine, which surprised me.
Which shocked me, yeah. To face nightmarish foes and legendary warriors in blisteringly fast hardcore combat. Master the way of the samurai in... What was you said?
Neo.
Right.
I'm honestly surprised you haven't already played this on PS4 because it is right. I tell you one thing. It's harder than a From Software game.
I have it. No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Mm-mm. Have you played the first one? Mm-hmm. Have you finished it?
No. I played the trial. Yeah. I have it. I have the game.
Yeah.
I haven't played it yet.
I don't think it's as elegant.
No, it's more brutal, but I could do it. Then unleash your inner darkness in Neo 2. Discover the complete Neo Saga with all 6 major expansions included. Battle the yokai threat at a targeted 120 frames per second with ultra-fast load times. Gameplay at 120 frames per second requires a compatible monitor that can support this feature.
Well, I'm doing some research on this because I think I've got the original Neo, and I think it was on PSN as well.
I think it was free.
Don't go rushing out to get the collection if you've already got the games. Because, yes, the second one probably benefits most from the PS5 upgrade, but there's a backwards compatibility patch that gets them right on the door. And you'd be splitting hairs if you were thinking, if you don't have any of them and you think, oh, I want this, get the PS5 Neo collection. But if you've got both of them or one and not two, just get the second one.
Yeah, I agree.
Play one and use the back compat patch. And I'm sure Digital Foundry will bring a video out and I'll be proved correct. So
no, I agree with you.
Last out the bin, out the boot of the mighty Ray, we've got ReZero, Starting Life in Another World, The Prophecy of the Throne, PS4, Switch, February 5th. The popular light novel anime series ReZero, Starting Life in Another World, is coming as a tactical adventure game. This game... on PC, at least, is $53. which seems an awful lot of money for a digital novel with tactical adventure in it. I haven't seen the price of PS4 or Switch, but if it's equidistant money, you've got to really like your tactical adventures, friend, because that is a hell of a lot of money. Before he leaves, we pick out a VHS each. This week, I'm going to pick out Series 1 of Xena on a bootleg DVD copy. That series is probably not aged the best, but it's what I want, so that's what I'm taking. Lucy Lawless, what have you got, Bobby?
You know what? To be honest, I failed, but if I had to think.
If you can't pick, I pick for you.
No, I can pick. And what really determined, I had a VHS, right? But then last night, listening to the Trash Tapes podcast.
Yeah.
The newest one was The Punisher. And I'm like, damn, that hit my heart. So that's what I'm going to pick. The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren.
Didn't you pick that last week?
Did not pick The Punisher last week. Last week, I picked Big Trouble in Little China.
I think you're incorrect.
I probably am.
Well, I'm sure they'll write in their thousands or let us know on the Discord. While you mention Trash Tapes, it's an elegant link for me to pick up on. I'm on the Trash Tapes podcast discussing the car crash that is Airwolf the movie. And if you're in their Discord or not, and you're listening to this, and it's Saturday the 6th of February at 1700 Greenwich Mean Time, and you're in their Discord, you can watch a live watch along of the movie. They've managed to find an 18 rated certificate version, so maybe that's going to make more sense to the 15 certificated version that I watched. Maybe there's bits missing. I don't know how it was an 18.
So 18 is like your rated R?
Yes.
Ooh.
For a family friendly, what ended up becoming a midday show here in the UK. It'll be on a Saturday afternoon, Airwolf. Its actual pilot movie in its original form is 18 certificate rated, an R. I mean, what even? What? How much more X-rated can a man crying while playing a cello by a lake get?
I mean, maybe, you know, there's some nudity.
Maybe there was a sex scene.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of it, right? It's not bloody, like you said, right? It's not.
Not obviously in the cut I saw, but maybe it is in reality. I don't know.
There could be some scenes with like extra blood from a gunshot or something. Or
there were some definitely moments where it could have gone dark, but yeah. So anyway, Trash Tapes podcast, keep your ears to that. I'm being very honoured to be invited onto that, but it's only because I'm probably one of the only human beings alive that's even seen Airwolf the movie, so I'm now almost an expert in it. And there you go. So tune in if you get to see the watch along. If not, tune in to the podcast Trash Tapes as we talk about what I feel is a car crash. It'll probably make perfect sense now watching it during the day, and it'll be like, George, I thought you said this was a crash. And I was like, yeah, it's now probably one of the best movies I've ever seen. Maybe that won't happen. Anyway, with that, Stingray's disbelief, he shakes his head at what could only be a car crash in Airwolf. He gives us our VHS picks and he jumps in his car and goes. Those that paid attention at the start of the show know. Now, Bobby, we can't finish the show until I ask you, what are you hoping to play?
Zombie Army Trilogy.
More of that.
And then Cyberpunk, for sure. I should be done with Zombie Army Trilogy probably this weekend. And then we'll probably hop on to Sniper Elite 3.
Yeah, that's the next game. They did the Sniper Elite games, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And the
yeah, because basically Zombie Army Trilogy, from what I understand, is like the Halloween DLC.
Oh.
Sniper Elite 2.
Right.
And I think Sniper Elite 3 had a Halloween DLC, which was this game. And then when they released the trilogy, the last episode, which is five levels, each five levels, this is the one that made the game like whole.
Mm.
And that's how they sold it as a separate game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Zombie Army 4 is actually a complete game from the ground up. It's not a DLC.
Every day is a school day.
Well, I learn more from you than you learn from me. That's for sure.
I don't know about that.
100% guarantee it. If you listen to the podcast, I am shocked all the time.
Okay, well, what am I going to play? I'm going to finish a bit more Remember Me. I might even dust off. I forgot to tell you, I've been playing the Lord of the Rings, The Third Age on PS2.
I never got into that one.
It's a turn-based game.
Yeah, that's why.
And the graphics for the console for the PS2 are absolutely brilliant. There's particle effects in the air. The Mines of Moria look incredible.
Is it like Two Towers style?
What, graphical?
Or a little bit better?
I would say it's better than that.
It's Two Towers was amazing.
Looked good, didn't it? Imagine that in a... I say it's an open world, but you're kind of like on this one long path, really, with multiple branching sections in it, but it, you can't really deviate. If you're in a wood, you're on a path through the wood, and that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. But the graphic effects and the faces, the integration of the film, bits and bobs, has been done in a real classy way. It's got some really unusual difficulty spikes. Like, one minute you're like just slicing through these goblins, and then you meet like a goblin leader on his own, and he'll wipe your team out, and it's like, doesn't really make any sense. We've all used our power on you and you're still alive and you've killed all my team and I don't know how. So it's a bit unusual in places, but for the most part, I'm enjoying it. I mean, I've got to the Mines of Moria. It's all three films together in one hit and I'm already sort of 4% in. No, 3% in at 2 hours. So it gives you an idea. It's a pretty long game.
Because this is happening at this... No, it's before, right? Or it's happening at the same time?
It's... You're kind of following the main cast of Lord of the Rings through. So you get to the Mines of Moria after they've gone into it. So you kind of like, you're a support team to the ring bearer.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's been a while since I played it. Well, that turned me off though. I try to get into it, but turn-based, man, it's just not for me. I can't really do it.
It's got some interesting bits in it. You know, like you play as a female elf and one of her spells that she uses is, you know, when I can't remember her name, but when the ring wraiths are chasing the woman and Frodo after he's been stabbed and she gets the white water horses to come down the river. When you play as this female elf, who's a different female elf in the game, one of her spells is the white horses. And that looks really good.
Really?
Yeah. You can build up your team into a special. You get this called a ring perfect and you can use like a volley of arrows or this or that or the other. And it's actually quite cool. It's probably a cash-in, but EA probably needed to get something out to capitalize on having the franchise. So yeah, that, Remember Me, and I might even dust off the PS5 and play that new Sackboy game that I've still got in its wrapper.
That would be beautiful.
I bet, from what I've seen, it looks phenomenal, so I might give that a whirl. I just want some real light experiences at the moment. I say light as in like 8-hour stints. Mm-hmm. I've done some big games over the past sort of 12 months and by choice, and I've enjoyed every single one of them, but you know, I just want to be in and out of different experiences. You know, get through, get the story done, bin it, next one, story done, bin it. You know, Final Fantasy 13 was a backbreaking experience. And Cyberpunk, you know, that sucked up 70 hours and I haven't done every ending in it, you know, so there's been some big games. Some that I've forced upon myself that aren't obviously new games, and then I pick up Lord of the Rings and I don't know why, because that's probably a 60 hour game, but mm-hmm. You know, it's me in it. I'm a bit strange. is that it, Bobby?
That's it for me. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, that's all we have time for this week, listeners. As always, thank you for your time. I look forward to the pleasure of speaking to you again next week. Until then, happy gaming, and remember, there's nothing wrong with being given the unofficial controller. It's what you do with it that counts. See you, Bobby.
Peace out.
Hi, it's George here from the Unofficial Controller Podcast. Just taking a moment to, first of all, thank you for listening. It means a hell of a lot to us. Secondly, every week we bring you free content, the latest news, the new releases, a feature of note, normally something to do with games or gaming past, be it one of our History Off documentaries or an insight into the industry itself or how games have affected us as people. Yes, we incorporate you, listeners, into that. All we ask is that you drop a little comment on our post on social media and you can get featured on the show. Hey, do you know what? You may even win a prize. The only charge for this is £0, zero pence, $0. That's right, no money. But all we ask is that you like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you found this show. And if you're feeling a little bit cheeky, Tell a friend, get them to do the same. We have a Discord that's free for you guys to all join in and get involved in. And the community on Instagram and Twitter is alive and thriving. So don't be a lonely gamer. Make yourself known. Thank you. And now it's time to begin this week's entertainment. Take care, guys.